Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, welcome, welcome on this lovely, tiring Sunday morning. Alhamdulillah, with myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, medium wave 1548, and on the also audio streaming, and also on the receivers that you have, and we have our international listeners also. Alhamdulillah, jazakallah for that. And tiring this weekend has been a tiring weekend, alhamdulillah. And also, it's been the most exciting week, I think, in my view, the most exciting week in the history of South Africa. But alhamdulillah, whatever it may, whatever happens through the will of Allah. Whatever goes on, it's all through the will of Allah. We just make dua to the Almighty Allah. Allah must make the conditions of the ummah better by the day, inshallah. That's the dua that we make. Our deen must be kept intact, inshallah. Whatever conditions are around us, our deen must be kept intact, inshallah. And that is the dua we make. With all what we hear, with all the politics around the world, with all the dangers around the world for the Muslims, and where Muslims are being captured unnecessarily, all those things, Allah must protect us from that, inshallah. And in South Africa in particular, we make dua to the Almighty Allah. It must stay the way it is for now, where we are protected. As a Muslim minority, we are protected. Allah must keep it that way, inshallah. We make dua to the Almighty Allah for that. So, very, very, very interesting. The expectations of many were shattered when the message was given by our famous president, Jacob Zuma. And some people they celebrated his message. Others were just shattered. And it was just the choice of individuals of how they felt about it. But once again, our conditions and the conditions of the country depends on the akhlaq of the Muslims. We must change our lives. We must get the serfs at Fajr to fill up as that of Juma, inshallah, and other salahs as well. And when that happens, inshallah, the changes will come for the Muslims. So we ourselves must try. Even when it comes to our personality, our akhlaq, let us try and change that for the better. So inshallah, make it easy for us. And alhamdulillah, there was a successful ijtima that took place last week. Very, very, very successful, I would say. Spoke to many of the seniors there. And alhamdulillah, there were many, many people that came. There were differences as of the other ijtimas. There were differences in the people that were sitting for the bayans. And it made a difference. And inshallah, if just a few people can change their lives with a gathering like that, I think that the maqsad of the ijtima was and had been fulfilled. People may term it differently, some people may look at it differently, but it's the word of Allah. So whatever it may be, it's the word of Allah. Let us look at it in that light. Whatever denomination, whatever you may do, or whatever your beliefs, Islamic beliefs are, but a gathering like that is all for the betterment of ourselves and all for the betterment of the deen of Islam. We make dua that Allah make it successful year upon year, and also bring all that was mentioned there in all the different bayans, bring that changes into the hearts of the people of the world, inshallah. Allah make it easy for us all, inshallah. Now, there's many different countries in the world that we look at. You get small countries, you get big countries, you get countries which are popular, we get countries which people don't even think of going to. And then you look at different parts of the world where countries were visited and cannot be visited anymore. That is why there were times when some seniors mentioned, if you need to visit, go visit as quick as you can. There's going to be a time where it's going to be very difficult for Muslims to visit. And we can see it. Unfortunately, this week also we had some incidents abroad where a few Muslim brothers were kept aside because they're Muslim. They went in, the country they went to you need not apply for visas beforehand. You would get visas on arrival. And upon reaching their destination, unfortunately, 5 Muslim brothers were turned away, and their passport was stamped. They waited in the airport, next plane got out and they had to get out of the country. And that is going to happen more often than not, from what we can gather. And it was said that this had happened. I was informed about it. We tried to do something from our side, but unfortunately, that's the way the rules are, and we could do nothing from here. So it is said that that's happening, and it's happening, like I say, more often than not. And we find that many, many people are now being turned away just because they have a Muslim name. It is said, Allah make it easy for us all, inshallah. Now, the different countries that we have in the world, you have a country where you go to, where you have small different countries also, big countries and so on. But where you have all territories of different nations, it seems like that we have an emergency here. We're going to take just a 1 minute break and we're going to come back again. There's an emergency live. There's a broadcast that's coming through. We need to just break for 1 minute, inshallah. We'll continue after that.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. A live broadcast from the team of Radio Islam, who's out in Paris at the open day at the launch of the clinics. And we're crossing over to Muhammad Amin, who is there. Hello, Sandra. It seems we've lost Muhammad Amin. I'm not too sure. Let's just try again. It's launch of, it's in Paris this morning and it's an open day, and we're trying to get hold of one of the reporters who is there online. And sorry, we do apologize for all of that delay, and we're trying to get hold of the person on the other side of the line, inshallah. It's Muhammad Amin. And he's going to give us an update of what's happening today, inshallah. He's going to give us an update, and we're trying to get hold of him. We do apologize for that interruption. And whilst we're waiting, Radio Islam's team is out in Paris this morning, and they have the launch of the mobile clinics, as well as an open day. And it's quite a big event that's being hosted, and we have a number of dignitaries that are present as well. And that is out in Paris this morning. Assalamu alaikum.
Kalimatan habibatan illa ar-Rahman khafifatan ala al-lisan thaqilatan.
To get our persons on the ground, we do apologize for that, and we cross over back to Muhammad Lambert.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Maaf for that. It was a break in transmission for an emergency message, but unfortunately we couldn't get through there. But if it does come through again, we definitely will cross live on that side. It is an important event that's taking place, so we will have to cross live on that side, so inshallah. But let us continue a little on our side until we do get that message coming in from that side, inshallah. Today we decided, I've been looking at a place called Gibraltar. Now we listened to Gibraltar many, many a times. And we wondered, some of us, when we looked at Gibraltar and for the very first time, I looked and I said, is it a place of a tourist place? Can we go there? Can we visit Gibraltar? What is Gibraltar all about? And I did some research on Gibraltar. Amazingly, for the population that Gibraltar holds, the tourism figures has been so phenomenally high. It's unreal that they live on tourism with such great numbers. Now, Gibraltar is a British overseas territory located on the southern end of the Iberian Peninsula at the entrance of the Mediterranean. It has an area of 6.8 kilometers squared and shares its northern border with the province of Cadiz in Andalusia, Spain. The Rock of Gibraltar is a major landmark of the region, and at its foot is a densely populated city area, home to over 30,000 Gibraltarians, and other nationalities too. An Anglo-Dutch force captured Gibraltar in 1704 from Spain during the War of the Spanish Succession on behalf of the Habsburg pretender to the Spanish throne. The territory was subsequently ceded to Britain in perpetuity under the Treaty of Utrecht in 1713 during World War II. And it was an important base for the Royal Navy as it controlled the entrance and exit to the Mediterranean Sea, which is only about 13 kilometers wide. Now, this country, as I mentioned, is 6.8 kilometers squared. There is dredging taking place as well in this region where they are reclaiming land from the sea. So they are expanding it slightly, making it bigger. But it's currently standing at about 6.8 square kilometers. Now, that's pretty small, eh? And today, Gibraltar's economy is based largely on tourism. You have online gambling, financial services, and shipping. Now, being at such a strategic point, shipping is one of the most important parts of their income. That is why they use shipping as one of their major incomes for the country. The sovereignty of Gibraltar is a major point of contention in Anglo-Spanish relations as Spain asserts a claim to the territory. Gibraltarians overwhelmingly rejected proposals for Spanish sovereignty in 1967 referendum and again in 2002 under the Gibraltar Constitution of 2006. Gibraltar governs its own affairs, though some powers such as defense and foreign relations remain the responsibility of the government of the UK. The name Gibraltar is a Spanish derivation of the Arabic name Jabal Tariq. Gibraltar is from the Arabic name Jabal Tariq, meaning the mountain of Tariq. It refers to the rock of Gibraltar, which was named after the Umayyad general Tariq ibn Ziyad, who led the initial incursion into Iberia in advance of the main Umayyad force in 711, the year 711, just over 100 years after the inception of Islam. Then already it was captured under the command of Umayyad Khalif al-Walid I. Earlier it was known as Mons Calpi, one of the pillars of Hercules. That was before the year 711. We always hear about the Rock of Gibraltar. Whenever you hear, even you have these nasheed songs and so on that comes that you get about the Rock of Gibraltar. The Rock of Gibraltar, the Calpi is a Latin name of it. But the Rock of Gibraltar is a monolithic limestone prominently located in the British Overseas Territory of Gibraltar, as we know it, off the southwestern tip of Europe, and the height is 426 meters. That's the rock that we talk about. The rock is crown property of the UK. They've taken that as their property when they captured and so on. That's what happens. And it borders Spain, as we said. Most of the rock's upper area is covered by a nature reserve, which is home to around 300 Barbary macaques. That's the apes that they have. These macaques, as well as there's a network of tunnels which attract a large number of tourists each year just to visit the Rock of Gibraltar. And then the Rock of Gibraltar was one of the pillars of Hercules and was known to the Romans as I said, Mons Calpi, the other pillar being Mons Abila or Jabal Musa on the African side of the strait. In ancient times, the two points marked the limit to the known world, a myth originally fostered by the Greeks and the Phoenicians. Gibraltar is not the southernmost point of Europe, which is the Punta de Tarifa at about 25 kilometers southwest of Gibraltar. Gibraltar is surrounded by the Mediterranean Sea and has no contact with the Atlantic Ocean. Now, Muslim history is quite quite extensive in the small place of Gibraltar. The Moorish castle is a relic of the Moorish rule over Gibraltar. Now, the Moorish is the Muslims of the time, which lasted for about 710 years, and it was built in the year 711. That is, as I mentioned, just over 100 years after the inception of Islam. And when the Berber chieftain Tariq ibn Ziyad first landed on the rock that still bears his name, the 17th century Muslim historian Al-Makari wrote that upon landing, Tariq burned his ships and said, "I'll never go away from this island again," and he stayed there forever. The principal building that remains is the Tower of Homage, a massive building of brick and very hard concrete called Tapia. The upper part of the tower housed the former occupants' living apartments and a Moorish bath. The history of Moorish Gibraltar began with the landing of the Muslims in Hispania and the fall of the Visigothic Kingdom of Toledo, and that was, as I said, in the year 711, and ended with the fall of Gibraltar to the Christian hands exactly 751 years later, which was in the year 1462, with an interregnum during the early 14th century. The Muslim presence in Gibraltar began on 27 April 711, precisely, when the Berber general Tariq ibn Ziyad led the initial incursion into Iberia in advance of the main Moorish force under the command of Musa ibn Nusayr Umayyad, the Umayyad governor of Ethiopia. Gibraltar was named after Tariq, who was traditionally said to have landed on the shores of the Rock of Gibraltar, though it seems more likely that he landed somewhere nearby. Muslim sources claim that Tariq established some kind of fortification on the rock, but no evidence has been found, and it is not considered credible. It was not until about 1160 that a first fortified settlement was built there. The Medinat al-Fat, in English it's known as the City of Victory, was intended to be a major city furnished with palaces, masjids, and it seems to have fallen well short of the ambitions of its founder, the Khalif Abd al-Mu'min, by the time it was captured by the Kingdom of Castile. In about 1309, after a short siege, Muslim control was restored in about 1333. For a few years it was taken away, but then there was Muslim rule restored again. And for a number of buildings and structures from the period still exist, including the Moorish castle, parts of the Moorish walls, as I mentioned, the bathhouse and a subterranean reservoir, which were built by the Muslims and put up by the Muslims. Gibraltar was subjected to several more sieges before the final fall in 1462 to the Christian forces under the first Duke of Medina Sidonia. The population, Muslim and Jewish, were expelled by the droves and replaced by Christian settlers. Unfortunately, that's what happened. Gibraltar is one of the most densely populated territories in the world, with a population estimated around about 32,000 people only. That's the population to date. And on average, you're looking at about between 5 and 5,500 inhabitants per square kilometer, which is a lot of people. That is why it's termed as one of the most densely populated areas. The growing demand for space is being increasingly met by land reclamation, but on a very small scale. So far the reclaimed land of Gibraltar is about 1/10 of the original size. So there is 10% of land which has been reclaimed from the ocean, from the sea, and it was dredged and brought part of Gibraltar. The demographics of Gibraltar reflect the many European and other economic migrants who came to the rock over 300 years after almost all the Spanish population left in about 1704. Regarding the origin of names in the electoral roll, there are British, which are 27%, Spanish 24%, mostly Andalusians, but also some 2% of Minorcans, Genoese and other Italians about 15%, Portuguese 15%, Maltese 8%, and there are also small, less than 1% people of other groups such as Moroccans, French, Austrians, Chinese, Japanese, Polish, Danish. So there's a variety of people from around the world that have settled in that part of the world. And in 2001, the Gibraltar census recorded the breakdown of nationalities in Gibraltar as being 83% Gibraltarian, Other British is about 9.5%, Moroccan 3.5%, 1.19% Spanish, and other EU countries 1% also they said. The official language of Gibraltar is and is used by the government and in schools. Most locals are bilingual, also speaking Spanish due to Gibraltar's proximity to Spain. However, because of the varied mix of ethnic groups which reside there, other languages are also spoken on the rock. Berber and Arabic are spoken by the Moroccan community, and you get the Hindi and Sindhi by the Indian and Pakistani communities of Gibraltar, respectively. Hebrew is also spoken by the Jewish communities, and the Maltese language is spoken by some families of the Maltese descent. So, Portuguese also is widely spoken, so they have a variety of languages, but obviously they just have that one, the English being the main language. And the Gibraltarians often converse in Latino, a vernacular unique to Gibraltar. So they've got their own language in Gibraltar, which is, you know, it's like a third language which gets formed in the country where there were the mix of different languages, then you have that particular language that comes forward. And you have with a strong mixture of British English and elements from languages such as Maltese, Portuguese, Genoese Italian, Akitia, this Latino, over 500 Latino words, for example, are of Genoese and Hebrew origin. Latino also often involves code switching to English with technical terms and complex ideas mostly expressed in English. And the Gibraltarians often, they call themselves Latinos because of the language that's come into Gibraltar. And then you have the different religions also, but we'll continue with religions of Gibraltar, and we have quite a bit of information about Gibraltar, but we'll continue right after the news.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548 on the Globe Trotting Program on this lovely Sunday morning where we've got interesting news. Listening to the news, we got just the most interesting news. Fantastic. Let us just listen. This whole week we're going to be listening to this news. Let us listen with abated breath as to the outcome of it all. And it's going to be very interesting, inshallah. We make dua to Almighty Allah. Allah make it easy for us all, inshallah. Before we went off for the news and the break, we're talking about Gibraltar, a country which is a tourist destination. I don't think many had visited Gibraltar, because it's not a place where anybody would think, let me go visit Gibraltar. But for those tourists out there who go out and do or visit different countries of the world, Gibraltar is one of the destinations that you should choose. Gibraltar is a place that you should visit. It's got rich, very, very rich Islamic history. It will be lovely to go there. So Gibraltar is a place that you should put on your bucket list also, to say that that's the place I'm going to be visiting soon, inshallah. There's been quite a few people that went for holiday this holiday season now, this April holiday, March, April holidays. And returning today are many from Vietnam, alhamdulillah, lovely. I'm just waiting to share experiences with them and listen to what they've got to say about the country. Many, many left for Vietnam around about the 22nd of March. And today, tomorrow, they're returning. I'm just so excited for them, alhamdulillah. Now, according to the 2012 census of Gibraltar, approximately 72% of Gibraltarians are Christians, 7.1% are atheists, and the Gibraltar Secular Humanist Society also holds regular meetings from time to time. The third religion in size is Islam, alhamdulillah, with a population of 3.6%. There's also an established Hindu population which is standing at about 2% currently, members of the Baha'i faith, and a long-established Jewish community which accounts for about between 2-2.5% of the population. As a share of a total population, this is the second largest Jewish population in the world, trailing only Israel. There are four functioning Orthodox synagogues in Gibraltar, and there are several kosher establishments. Likewise, because of the Muslim population, there's lots of halal establishments also in Gibraltar. Now, being a small place of about 7 ± 7 square kilometers, 6.97 square kilometers, we'd wonder what is the transport system like. Being so small, is it motorcycles and bicycles only, because the cars will be too big for the place? Surprisingly, the Gibraltar cable car runs from outside the Gibraltar Botanic Gardens to the top of the rock. And within Gibraltar, the main form of transport is the car. Motorcycles are also popular, but not as popular as the cars that are on the island. And there's a good modern bus service. Unlike in the UK and other British territories, traffic drives on the right, as the territory shares a land border with Spain. There is a Gibraltar cable car which runs from ground level to the top of the rock, which has to be, because it's the attraction there. And it has an intermediate station at Apes Den. And the restrictions on transport introduced by Spanish dictator Francisco Franco closed the land frontier in 1969 and also prohibited any air or ferry connections. In 1982, the land border was reopened as a result of an agreement signed in Cordoba on the 18th of September 2006 between Gibraltar, the United Kingdom, and Spain. The Spanish government agreed to relax border controls at the frontier that have plagued locals for decades. In return, the British paid increased pensions to Spanish workers who lost their jobs when Franco closed the borders. Telecommunication restrictions were lifted in about February 2007, and air links with Spain were restored in December 2006. They do have an airport with limited flights from different countries that's in and around Gibraltar, that flies into Gibraltar. So if you want to fly into Gibraltar, you cannot fly directly from South Africa to Gibraltar. You have to go to the UK first, catch a flight, and then go into Gibraltar. And it is pretty small, so you can fly in. It's not because it's so small you wouldn't have an airport. But it would be interesting to see what size airport they have there. And Gibraltar maintains regular flight connections to London, Birmingham, and Manchester. And then you have scheduled flights to Morocco and Madrid. It proved unsustainable due to insufficient demand. But there is an airline which started flights from the East Midlands Airport to the Rock in about March 2012. And in September 2012, the airline closed because there weren't that many people going into Gibraltar by flight, by air. And then the GB Airways operated a service between Gibraltar and London and other cities for many, many years. And the airline initially flew under the name Gibraltar Airways. And in 1989, and in anticipation of service to cities outside the UK, Gibraltar Airways changed its name to GB Airways, with the belief that a new name would incur fewer political problems. As a franchise, the airline operated flights in full British Airways livery. In 2007, GB Airways was purchased by EasyJet, which began operating flights under their name in April 2008. So a small country like that have lots of their own politics about airlines and flights and so on, but there are flights going in and out of Gibraltar. So if you are interested in that, look at the flights going from Johannesburg, first of all, to the UK, or if you're going into Spain, from there you can fly into Gibraltar. Because if you look at the position of Gibraltar, it's just below, it's not far from the UK, not far from Spain, it's just within that region. So you can rather take your flights in from there. So that'll make it much, much easier. And Gibraltar Airport is consistently listed as one of the world's scariest for air passengers. It is exposed to strong crosswinds around the rock and across the bay, where making landings in winter particularly uncomfortable. Obviously, being so small, the country being so small, and you got ocean all around, you are definitely going to have lots of winds, crosswinds coming across from all directions because it's so small. But that's probably a challenge. That's where the adrenaline starts pumping, and that must be lovely. That must be fantastic. So alhamdulillah. So you can look at that. Look at flying into Gibraltar, and then you have motorists and pedestrians crossing the border with Spain. They are occasionally subjected to very long delays, an issue the Gibraltar government has failed to solve. Spain has occasionally closed the border during disputes or incidents
involving the Gibraltar authorities, such as the Aurora cruise ship incident, and when fishermen from Spanish fishing vessels, they were arrested for illegal fishing in the Gibraltar waters. So there was some instability there. The most popular alternative airport for Gibraltar is Malaga Airport in Spain. So you can fly into Spain and then you come across from Spain. It's about 120 kilometers from there. It's to the east of Gibraltar, which offers a wide range of destinations. Second to Jerez Airport, which is closer to Gibraltar. In addition, you have there's a heliport. It also offers scheduled services into Gibraltar. Gibraltar receives a number of visits from cruise ships. Now, the cruise ships that we know, we find lots of times you'll have cruise ships going from Cyprus, going from Greece. They go down that way, and you'll find that they stop in Gibraltar. Just for a day visit, they go to Gibraltar. You'll find many, many ships there. And many ships are docked around Gibraltar. So that you'll find if you're standing in on the mountain top of Gibraltar and you look across, you will definitely see many, many ships. These cruise ships, huge 40, 50,000 ton ships. Boy, they docked on the side, and you'll find lots of their visitors going by ferry or by boat with their little boats going on into Gibraltar. You would find that very, very common. And it is a stopover point for many, many cruise ships, because it's because of the size of the place and because of its strategic location. The ships find that they should stop there, and just for a day, you find that they'll come there in the morning. They spend the entire day with the visitors going off into Gibraltar, and late afternoon they'll all get back onto the ships and continue from there. You'd find that happening more often than not. And then you'll have passenger and cargo ships. They anchor in Gibraltar Harbour. Also, a ferry links Gibraltar with Tangier in Morocco. The ferry between Gibraltar and Algeciras, which had been halted in about 1969, when Franco-Soviet communications with Gibraltar was finally reopened in 2009, served by the Spanish company also, so they are busy with that. So that is also bringing tourism into the country. And for a small country like that, there are millions of tourists going annually into Gibraltar. As compared to the population, it's unreal what population or tourist population goes into Gibraltar. It is just amazing. And that is why they depend on tourism. In fact, many, many countries in the world depend on tourism, where they look at tourism as being their primary source of income. I don't know what happened with South Africa. But, you know, that's what happens, man. But anyway, you know, alhamdulillah, when it comes to tourism to Gibraltar, we find that we should look at it as the Islamic history of Gibraltar. Fantastic Islamic history. There's great Islamic history. And we should look at it from that direction. Now, for visas for Gibraltar, as a general rule, those who require a visa for entry to the UK also require a separate visa for entry into Gibraltar. So you should, when you get to the UK, or you go, and also if you want to make an application directly from South Africa, if you're leaving for Gibraltar, application should be made at the British Embassy in South Africa for Gibraltar. And you get your visas from here, you go, and you can then enter. And also, there is some pact with Schengen visas also. So when you're going into Europe, there's some pact with Schengen visas. It will become easier for you to get into Gibraltar. And then, the history you have where the Muslim settlers, you have in about 1160, the Almohad Sultan Abd al-Mu'min ordered that a permanent settlement including a castle be built, and it received the name of Madinat al-Fath, the city of victory. On completion of the works in the town, the Sultan crossed the strait to look at the works and stayed in Gibraltar for 2 months. The Tower of Homage of the Moorish castle remains standing today. And after the conquest, King Henry IV of Castile assumed the additional title of King of Gibraltar, establishing it as part of the comarca of the Campo Llano de Gibraltar. 6 years later, Gibraltar was restored to the Duke of Medina Sidonia, who sold it in 1474 to a group of Christian converts from Judaism, from Cordova, in exchange for maintaining the garrison of the town for 2 years, after which time they were expelled. And in 1501, Gibraltar passed back to the Spanish crown, and Isabella I of Castile issued a royal warrant granting Gibraltar the coat of arms that it still uses up until today. And in 1704, during the War of Spanish Succession, a combined Anglo-Dutch fleet representing the Grand Alliance captured the town of Gibraltar. On behalf of the Archduke Charles of Austria, in his campaign to become King of Spain, the occupation of the town by alliance forces caused the exodus of population to the surrounding area of the Campo de Gibraltar. And as the alliance's campaign faltered, the 1713 Treaty of Utrecht was negotiated and ceded control of Gibraltar to Britain to secure Britain's withdrawal from the war. Now, as small as it is, it's got such great history and it's got so much to talk about, especially if you're looking at all the different nationalities. You're looking at all, you know, it's just amazing, man. It's just amazing to note that a place like this where Muslims came across, now, as we know, because of Spain and because of the history of Spain, then you have Cordoba, you have where Muslims were centered. This place being just across from there, not far, it's like I said, about 75 kilometers from Spain, and Muslims occupied the place in about 711, which is just over 100 years since the inception of Islam. And that became Muslim. Unfortunately, that whole region lost the title of Islam over the period thereafter, which was 600-800 years thereafter, lost Islam. And there's lots of Islamic history regarding that. And that is why we should look at Gibraltar being a tourist destination, going out there and visiting specifically because of the rich Islamic history. And then you also have Gibraltar, the climate of Gibraltar. It has a subtropical Mediterranean climate with mild winters and warm summers. The rain occurs mainly in winter, with summer being generally dry. Its average annual temperature is about 22 degrees Celsius, which is quite warm, which is about our temperatures, I would say. During the day, you'll get 15 degrees. During the day, it's about 22 degrees, and at night, you'll get about 15 degrees. And in the coldest months, which is January, the temperature ranges between 11 to 18 degrees Celsius, which is pretty warm for us. During the day, you have 9 to 14 degrees Celsius. That's during the day, 11 to 18, and at night, from 9 to 14 degrees Celsius. The average sea temperatures, now this is a bit chilly, I would say, at about 15 to 16 degrees Celsius in the winters. And in the warmest month, which is August, the typical temperatures ranges between 25 to 31 degrees Celsius, which is now ideal as a tropical country's temperatures. When you look at all these tropical countries, they have their oceans, especially on the Indian Ocean belt. You would find that these are the temperatures of the waters during the day. And you'll get them during the night, you'll get water temperatures in summer just above 20 degrees Celsius. And the average sea temperature is about 22 degrees Celsius. So it's pretty warm. And you have ocean right around. So being a 7 plus minus 7 square kilometer country, you can go to just about any beach around that particular place. Then you have also the flora and fauna, there are over 500 different species of flowering plants. Now you'd find many people, in fact just now about two, three weeks ago, there was somebody that was flying abroad, and I asked them, what tourism do you want to do? Because when people phone me, I ask them also, do you want to go, are you into museums? Are you into city tours? Are you into relaxing on the beach? What type of holiday are you looking for? If you ask me, I would tell you which direction then. There was a particular family that I spoke to, and I could not believe when they said, we go for the flora and fauna. We go there and we take photographs of all the flora and fauna, and we've got thousands of pictures of all the different flora and fauna that every different country that they visited has. And they say, that is what we're going for. And when I looked at that and I said, it's amazing that you find different types of people looking at different types of holiday destinations with different reasons. Now, you'd find some people that would go and their primary aim would be, let's go shopping. And you'd find many a people going, they'll go to probably a common place you're looking at, Dubai. When they go to Dubai, nothing else but shopping, shopping and shopping. Then you'd find some people saying Malaysia would be the best during the Malaysia shopping festival. That's what we're going for. Whereas you get some people that would say, no man, when we get to a destination, we cut shopping out completely. We're not interested in that. We're interested in visiting the country itself. We're interested in visiting the country to see what the country has to offer. Shopping you'd get around from your place as well. Wherever you are, you'd get shopping. So leave shopping for now. Although, when you get there, you take that time of going probably an hour or two, shop for the family, shop for yourself, whatever it is, and get out of there. But more so, visit the country. Visit the outlying areas of any destination that you'd go to. Many a times you'd find people that go to certain destinations, and surprisingly so, when some people go and they come back, lots of listeners, and believe me when I tell you, I have lots of listeners, when they come back, they pop me mails, they pop me SMSs, some of them would send me a message, when can I call you, I'd like to talk to you about the destination I've just come from, and, you know, can we talk to you about that? And for me, it's very interesting. I'd leave everything and I'd listen to them, what they have to say. And I find it so very much interesting that people find pleasure in so many different types of things, in different destinations. And when I look at it, I look and I say, what an amazing bunch of people we are as human beings. That you find some people, when they look and they said, you know, when we just landed at the airport, we got to the airport, what we did, when we get to the airport, we get to the tourist places or tourist offices, and we ask for a certain line of tourism in that particular country. For example, we say, okay, listen, we'd like to go to wet forests in certain countries. We just want to go into forests and look at all the different types of flora, fauna, animals, creatures, all different types of forest inhabitants, I would say. And they look and they just do that. And then you get others who would say, I would just like to go and visit all the different buildings, the tallest building that you have in your country. Take me to all the different types of buildings. And you'd find that also. And then you'd find that there are many, many, many different types of other tourism interests that people show in going when they go to different countries. And you'd find, and like I said also, you'd find people doing shopping. Now, I personally, this is my personal view, when it comes to those that only love to do shopping, I find them to be the most boring people. Seriously. When you go out and you only want to go do shopping, and believe me when I tell you, there's many people that go out for that, and if you are one of them, you must be saying, yes, you know, how true, that you just love to go shopping in different places, because when you come back with all different items from that particular country, and you say, this is from that country, and this from that country. You know what, let's go to a country, let's go visit a different country with the view of going to see the place, the history of the place, the views of the place, and the beauty of the place. Let us do that, and that's when you'll enjoy your tourism most. And also, when you reach your destination or going to the destination, let us look at different methods of transport. That makes another difference. Get onto the local bus system, get onto the trains, get onto the duck-ducks. That is the fun of tourism. But more so, before I sign off, when you get to your destination, do not leave Islam behind. Take your deen with you wherever you go. Let us show our deen wherever we are in the world. And inshallah, Allah will change somebody's heart for you going as a tourist to another country, to visit another country with the intention, Ya Allah, I want to show my akhlaq, and I want to show a bit of my Islam to those people, and one person must change. Inshallah, as that will be Dawit. And if that is your intention, inshallah, Allah will make your whole journey easy for you. And Allah will protect you, and that will become a means of reformation for yourself, and Dawit for other people. And that is where your holiday becomes a holiday, number one, and also a form of Dawit for other people. So inshallah, with that intention, let us look at it that way, and let us go and have a good time with our deen intact with us. Let us not forget our salats. Allah made it so easy for us, where we have shortcut namaz, I would call it. Your Zohar salat is only 2 rakats. Asr is 2 rakats. Unfortunately, Maghrib, you can't make 1.5, so it's 3 rakats. Your Isha is 2 rakats and 3 witr. And that's it. So quick, you can make your salah. Inshallah, let us make that intention. Let us go and let us tour the world while we can as Muslims, and come back as better people, inshallah, by learning what difficulties other Muslims and other people go throughout the world, and what they have, what difficulties they have, and what comforts we have in South Africa. Let us look at it in that light also. Inshallah, from myself, Muhammad Lamat, until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.